As some of you may know, I had the amazing opportunity to travel to Israel this August. I was part of the third annual Young People's Holy Pilgrimage hosted by Discipleship Ministries. I was one of 9 young adults from around the world who embarked on this journey together. And whenever I travel, I sort of feel like I'm in a time warp, like this is the only thing that exists, and when I come home like 2 days later, I'm not sure what really happened. So I was really excited to be able to write a little bit about my trip and relive it just a little bit. I'm not going to tell you all about it because we would be here till next Sunday, so I'm only going to give you little pieces. So on Saturday, August 2nd, I began a journey of nearly 36 hours by myself. I flew from Syracuse to JFK and from JFK to Kiev, where I sort of accidentally met up with one of my trip mates who was flying from Latvia. We had no idea we were going to be on the same flight. And luckily, she recognized me from my Facebook profile picture. So we traveled the last leg of the journey from Kiev to Tel Aviv together. Our entire group was finally together that Sunday night, and we had what I can only hope will be the most awkward dinner of my life. We were from 10 different countries and had not really figured out our groove of how we fit together and what you could joke about, and young adults in the United Methodist tradition are 18 to 35, and so we had a very wide range of ages, and so the classic, like, what are you studying in college, or what are you watching on Netflix right now, didn't really apply to everybody. So the first day was tough, but we worked through it, and we really became a team. The first time that I really felt that we'd sort of hit our groove as a group was on our full day 3. We just spent 2.5 days walking through Jerusalem without a second to ourselves. But we had started finally joking with each other. We sort of knew the things that we could talk about. We had sort of built friendships, and we were starting to feel cohesive. Our last stop that afternoon was at one location that could have been the Garden of Gethsemane. What was sort of disappointing in Israel was that a lot of the sites are like that. You can't really prove that it was the Garden of Gethsemane. This could have been the Garden of Gethsemane. This might be where Jesus performed the miracle of the loaves and the fishes, but you can't prove it. So I think we were at our second Garden of Gethsemane in Golgotha of the day, or maybe our third. This one, for me, the garden was very convincing, but Golgotha being translated to skull, being the rock that, in theory, the crosses were placed on, this one was even less convincing to me than the last. I could show you a picture downstairs, but they were like, oh, no, you can't see the face in your naked eye. You have to take a picture on your phone, and then you can see it. I can't see it. But I have the picture to prove it. But the garden was very peaceful and so beautiful, and we sort of descended into what could have been the tomb that Jesus was laid in. This is the most convincing of them because there's a carving in the stone, which is now very faint, but this could be the tomb where Jesus was laid, and this one more than the other tombs we've been into, I felt sort of humbled by. I was really taking some time to process and to think about this. Our trip leaders had reserved a small space for us. They hadn't told us this. They reserved a small space for us to have communion together. And it was sort of the perfect moment. We had finally come together as a group. We felt sort of like a family. And that was the first time we had communion, the first of 3 times we had communion together. And I think the timing of it was perfect because we were in a beautiful location and we had finally figured each other out. And so I was glad we did it the timing that we did. We were finally a group, we were one team, we were one body together in Christ, and our cultural differences were not existent in that moment. It was just us in the midst of a sacrament passed down to us by Jesus himself, and it was really incredible. Our group got along really well for the rest of the trip, but there was another experience on day 8 that really drove the concept of team home for me. We were hiking part of the Jesus Trail, which is a 40-mile trail that connects different places where important things happen in Jesus' life, primarily, I think, miracles. So we hiked a very small portion of it from the top of Mount Arbel into the valley to Magdala. Our guide mistakenly, we had a very nice Palestinian Christian man who was our guide, and he mistakenly took us on the wrong trail. So while our trip leaders had already told us that this was going to be a hard hike, this became almost unmanageable for some of our teammates. There were sections of the trail that were so steep that your only option was to cling to embedded steel hand and footholds in the side of the rock as like small pieces of rock were tumbling down next to you. And while you're looking out over the valley in the Sea of Galilee, there's also nothing underneath you except for maybe a team member that you don't really want to fall on. So while I could have just clung to the side of the rock and looked out over the view forever, not all of my teammates felt that way. So we had to work together to make sure all of us got down safely and comfortably. And we were such a team at that point that none of our trip leaders had to say anything. All of us knew who was struggling. We each sort of like took a person who was struggling and we walked them through it. Our trip leaders didn't have to prompt us at all. We just knew it, we took care of it, and it was really impressive to see how far our group had come from 8 days earlier when we didn't remember each other's names. So in addition to getting used to each other in Israel, we also had to wrap our heads around being in Israel. The time change was a big shift, so was the heat. Even compared to upstate New York, it was hot. But the thing about Israel is that you're in some of the holy, you're going to some of the holiest places in the world for multiple religions, not just our own. And so there's some amount of reverence that just has to sort of constantly be in your heart the whole time you're there. But also you have to respect the deep conflict in the area. You can't just admire the religious spaces. You have to understand the conflict as well. So our first three full days we spent just walking through Jerusalem, and we could have honestly taken a week and still not seen everything. We walked through the city with one Israeli Jewish guide and one Palestinian Christian guide. We would turn a corner and suddenly be in a Hasidic Jewish neighborhood or a Muslim neighborhood. And it took us a little while to sort of see the differences. Well, I saw the differences, but it took a while for me to really ingrain those. But it took me even longer until our last day in Jerusalem to notice that we and the other tourist groups like us were the only groups that were willingly passing freely between the neighborhoods. Even in what could be argued the holiest city in the world, the divide was tangible. We stood on countless outlook points, looking at walls and fences and man-made divisions. We passed through border crossings where a Palestinian bus driver held his breath until he was allowed to pass. We sat at the Dome of the Rock, the third holiest site for Muslims, and watched Jewish protesters get escorted out by armed policemen. We stood at the base of the iconic wall that reads, "Make hummus, not walls," and read poetry and graffiti and art that attempts to display the anguish of millions of people passed down through generations and generations, and all in the most sacred country in the world. An important theme for me on the trip became the concept of a tell. A tell, T-E-L, is an artificial mountain. They're created when a city is built and a war comes along and destroys it, and then another city is built on top of it and it's destroyed and so on and so forth. This is also where the phrase, "not the hill I'm willing to die on," comes from. My favorite fun fact for my trip. Tel Aviv is probably the most well-known example of the use of the word tell, as is Tel Gezer, which was our very first stop on the first morning of our trip. Now a national park, Tel Gezer was fascinating to walk around at it, as it has more than 20 layers, various pieces of which have been excavated to demonstrate how many times the land changed hands. During our processing time that evening, we discussed how disheartening it feels to have such a beautiful and diverse country divided because of religion. Religion should be a thing that brings people together. And it's not something that I realized separated the world quite as much as it did, probably due to my own ignorance about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict before this experience. I've always expected the Holy Land to be holy. If you're always going on to perfection, then I thought this would be the closest place. Instead, this is the most conflict-stricken area I've ever visited. And after our first full day, I wrote in my journal, "Tonight I feel disappointed that this holy area cannot be fully appreciated, because you cannot see the beauty and the awe-inspiring sights without also seeing the conflict." In my journal, I remembered earlier that day standing in the bottom of once was one, of what was once a mikveh, a ritual bath, and looking through the fence that splits it almost directly in half to the Palestinian-owned portion. And our Israeli tour guide remarking, come back in 10 years, we'll have it by then. It feels dishonest to me to the history of these places to think of them as territory to fight over. One of our trip leaders that same night, our very first night, asked us if we feel a similar conflict within the United Methodist Church today. And I do. A dominant group in our church is dictating our future, and this church is separated like Israelis and Palestinians, divided on an issue that in my eyes should be simple. Like the Holy Land should be open to all, so too should the United Methodist Church. We cannot live in our separate neighborhoods any longer. We must come together to find a way forward or risk the United Methodist Church becoming just another layer of the tell of Protestant history.